Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 26, is called Wonderful Krishna. This is text 7, I think. Kva chittainam gavastanye. Matra badha ulukale. Gachan anju Arjunayur Madhye Bahubhyam Tava Patyava Kachit. Once. Hainyangava Bhatta Stainye. Engaged in stealing. Matra. By his mother. Badha, bound up. Udukale, to a large mortar. Gachan, moving. Arjunayo, the twin Arjun trees. Madhye, between. Bahubhyam, by his hands. Tau apataya, he made them fall. Translation. Once his mother tied him with ropes to a mortar because she had caught him stealing butter. Then crawling on his hands, he dragged the mortar between a pair of Arjun trees and pulled them down. Please repeat. Once his mother
tied him with ropes
to a mortar because she had caught him stealing butter. Then crawling on his hands, he dragged the mortar between a pair of Arjun trees and pulled them down. Purport. The two Arjun trees were old and thick, and they towered above little Krishna's courtyard. Nevertheless, they were pulled down quite easily by the naughty child. Omagina timrandasya gina gina salakaya chakshu unmilitam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha. So this, you notice when I was reading it, I kept putting a twin in there because in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada writes the twin Arjun trees. And for those of us older devotees, we have heard these pastimes so many times, perhaps on Janmastamis and plays with children and so on and so forth. So they make a kind of a pattern in the mind that you that as soon as you see something, you remember, oh, I remember this. So sometimes it's a challenge to sort of set aside what we remember and actually hear the pastime again in a new, up-to-date way, because the mind is the repository of so many impressions and it contains them like a computer. So we have to always be refreshing it and taking in again the same subject matter from a more illuminating point of view. So this pastime, Wonderful Krishna, I remember myself personally reading, when I would read the Krishna book, I would think, why is this here? Because if you notice, the pastime right before is how Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, and the one before that is worshipping Govardhan Hill, so it's Govardhan, Govardhan. And then right after this pastime, it goes right into with Indra coming to apologize for his mistake, his offenses. So there's this little tiny pastime, this little tiny chapter that's put in here. And in Nandagram, if you go to Nandagram, even today, there is a place down from the hill. Nandeshwar Hill is very steep. And at the top of the hill, this is the temple of Nanda Maharaj. But at the base of the hill, further into the village of Nandagram, there's a very kind of actually quite a remote place, a quiet place. And there's a kund. And there's a small temple, a very sort of, it's not a very impressive, a little courtyard, big courtyard, little temple. And inside that temple, there's a very large picture about this big, quite large, for in Braj. And it's Nanda Maharaj is sitting there, and on one knee he has Balaram, and on the other knee he has Krishna. And so this place is called Nanda Bhavan. So, because of course what we see when we go to the holy places is not what was present when Krishna's Leela was taking place. We're seeing something to remind us of these different pastimes. It is said that this is the place of Nanda Maharaja's assembly house. So, the story is told on Brajamandal Prikram how the men of Nandagram, they thought very seriously about this pastime. I mean, if you think about it for a moment, if somebody very small, if a vai or somebody very smaller, a little larger than that, was to lift up something that was really extraordinary, if he picked up the temple, for example, with us all inside and held it up on his finger for a week, we would all, maybe at the time you'd be a little taken aback by the whole experience and you wouldn't be thinking, you'd be just sort of amazed. But after he put it back down and sort of went about his business, you'd be thinking about this. So similarly it describes at the beginning of this chapter, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says, that during Krishna's pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, the cowherd men simply enjoyed the spiritual bliss of his pastime. They were so caught up in it, because there he was. And Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur tells us that this was the only time, the first time in Krishna's pastimes where he made himself so available to everyone for such a long time. Because he's standing up there holding the hill and everyone in Vrindavan was under the hill. So the cows were there and the cowherd boys were there and his mother was there and his father was there and all the young gopis were there. And they were all under this hill together. Now normally they had their day-by-day duties. When Krishna would wake up in the morning, Mother Yasoda would take care of him and get him up and bathe him and so forth. And the cowherd boys would be thinking, oh, he's taking such a long time. We want to go out and play. Why is he taking such a long time? And they would come early even to say, hurry up, hurry up. They wanted to go. But as soon as the cowherd boys took Krishna off to the forest with them to play with the calves, the cows lamented because, oh, Krishna has gone. He's taken the calves, the cows. The calves are so fortunate, but we are so unfortunate. And Mother Yasoda didn't want to let him go. And she would make many excuses just at the juncture when he was about to go to try to take longer time with him. And she would go through in her mind all the things that could happen to him. She would tell some of his stronger cowherd friends, you stay here and you stay there and don't leave him. And she would call Balaram and say, don't leave his side. Last night when the boys came home, they talked about some terrible fierce demon that came and attacked him. You stay by his side and don't let anyone come near him. And Krishna would assure her, they just tell these stories, you know, they're just young boys. We just make up stories, don't worry, we're all right. We can go now. And Mother Yasoda is holding on. And when they go, then she feels very sad because Krishna is not present. And it describes in the Bhagavatam that she goes about her daily activities out of habit. That means just like, you know, how we know how to drive from our house to the temple. You can get in the car and start driving and you can have a conversation. You can keep your eyes on the road, hopefully. And you have a conversation and your mind is on the emotional content of the conversation. But you know how by habit to do this. So they went about their whole life like that. Just out of habit they knew how to do this, to churn the butter, to do this. But their whole consciousness was on Krishna. But now Krishna was in the forest. And then all night, the forest, all the birds in the forest, the deer in the forest, when Krishna would leave in the evening, they would come to the edge of the forest. And they couldn't come any further because this was their place of serving Krishna. But they would cry and they would sleep the whole night feeling completely empty. It was as if the forest would become like dead. And Vrinda Devi would come in the morning and tell the forest to wake up. Now it's your time to serve. And so then the birds would start to sing beautiful songs for Krishna. And the flower trees would blossom into flower, so it would be quite scenic for Krishna as he walked along. So the forest would be happy now. He's in the forest, and the people in Nandagram are not happy. And when he leaves, it becomes vice versa. And the cowherd girls, they were not happy because they wanted to see Krishna, and Krishna's going. And their mother-in-law would take them home and say, now you churn the butter, and now you make the cheese, and now you do this, and now you do that. So they're in their hearts missing Krishna. Of course, as we say, and we know this, these are all ecstatic emotions. This is not like the frustration you'd feel if there's millions and millions and millions of people in the spiritual world and one Krishna. And so you're always trying to sort of figure out how you can get a little bit of, you know, when Srila Prabhupada would come somewhere, those of us who have seen him know this experience, that he would come in and everyone was hoping he would look at them, right? Just hoping that maybe he would look at me because there's so many people there, and he, you know, he only has one pair of eyes, and he'll look around and maybe he's passed his glance to you, and then you feel elated, he looked at me. And then from there he goes on and he's talking to somebody else, and you're sort of like, I'm here too. And but he's only one person, how many people can he give his attention to? But Krishna's not like that. Krishna can give his attention unlimitedly, and he does. And so his pastime to leave and to come is to increase the loving emotions of his devotees. It's not because he can't handle it all. I need a break. I have to go off to the forest. So Krishna, he's coming, he's going, but under the hill, he's staying. He's staying and standing there with the hill on his little finger, and everyone can see him. Everyone is there. All the deers are there, the cows and calves are there, the cowherd boys and the cowherd girls are there. And they're all enjoying so much happiness just to look at Krishna that they can't take their eyes off him, and they don't even think of eating or of sleeping. It doesn't even register with them. It's just that Krishna is there in such a wonderful, available way. So at that time they had no thought. They were only relishing Krishna's association. And Krishna, he talked to them and teased them and played with them. The cowherd boys, especially Madhu Mangal, he said, oh, look how Krishna is holding this wonderful hill on the little finger. He's just holding it there just like it's a ball of cotton. And Mother Yasoda became completely disturbed and said, don't you speak like this? Don't you understand how much discomfort he's in? He's got this huge mountain on top of his arm. I want to massage his arm and make sure his arm was all right, but he's carrying this mountain. And the boys are saying, listen, we'll put our sticks up and we can hold it, and you can rest for a little while, you can rest your arm. And Mother Yasoda is wanting to feed him something, and she's chastising him and saying, why did you act so disrespectfully towards Indra? I always tell you, you're so disrespectful. You don't act properly. And now this has happened. And look, here we are like this, and I have to watch you like this, and this is causing me so much grief and pain. And all the residents of Vrindavan, in their different ways, are reciprocating with Krishna in this fashion. And Krishna's telling them, don't worry, it's not actually resting on my finger, it's sort of levitating. It's just holding above. There's no problem, Mother, don't worry. And she's becoming anxious, and she's thinking what to do, and feed him things into his mouth because he'll get tired. So everybody was reciprocating with Krishna. And Krishna, as we hear in the Nectar of Devotion, he would turn his glance towards the gopis, and the gopis would shoot they glance towards Krishna, and Krishna would tremble, and the hill would tremble, and everyone would think, oh, he's going to drop it. And then he would become a little embarrassed, and he would in this way become shy in front of his parents. But everyone reciprocated in their own moods with Krishna. Then, after 1 week, he put this hill down. And when he put the hill down, first he asked the cows to leave. He shooed the cows out, and the cows went shooting out from under the hill. But then they looked and they saw that Krishna was still under the hill. So they shot back in again. So again he had to tell all the cows to go out. So the cows all went out. And after the cows had gone out, then everybody went out. And Krishna put the hill down just like a child would take, if they had something, a mushroom on their hand, and they go flick, and it just lands on the ground. He just put it back as effortlessly as that. And then all the residents of Vrindavan crowded around him to see how he was, because Even though they're all together, there was a tension because he had this hill on his hand. This was the reason. Now the hill was gone. So now they were all anxious to see how he was, was he all right, and so forth. So they did this, and they all expressed their love in their own ways for him. And the little ones, they were very looking up, and the bigger ones had their arms around him, and they all showed their affection and their praise for him. And then they went home. And then they started thinking about what had just happened. The cowherd men enjoyed simply the spiritual bliss of the Lord's activities without analyzing them. But afterwards, when they had returned to their homes, perplexity arose within their hearts. They thought, now we have directly seen Krishna lift Govardhan Hill, and we remember how he killed Putana and other demons, extinguished a forest fire, and so on. At the time, we thought that these extraordinary acts occurred because of a benediction from the Brahmins, or because of Nanda Maharaj's great fortune, or that perhaps this boy had achieved the mercy of Lord Narayan, and thus he was empowered by him. These were their, they analyzed the situation like this. They never really thought that a five-year-old boy, he could be God. That didn't add up to them. They thought, there's Lord Narayan, he may bless this boy, you know, he's given him some superhuman powers, he's definitely unusual, I can say that, and he's been very much harassed, and he's somehow or other, he's managed to be protected by the mercy of Lord Narayan, and he seems quite strong, he's relatively strong. So what is this? So they thought, but all these presumptions are false, they thought. Actually, this is not true. These things may not be the truth, because a seven-year-old boy, he was 7 years old, could never hold up the king of mountains for seven whole days. Then they thought, he's not a human being. He must be the Lord himself, they began to think. But, having thought like this, and this is what they wanted to discuss with Nanda Baba, on the other hand, they went through a list of all the little frailties of a seven-year-old, all the childishness that they had seen Krishna exhibit, all the naughty behavior. And as they thought about that, they thought, if he's God, if he's God, he's so powerful, he can't be an ordinary child. Maybe they progressed to this side. Maybe he's God. And then they went, but, and they thought back over all of his naughty behavior, and they thought, if actually he's the Lord, why does he do these things? Don't they indicate that he's just a little child? So they said, we are totally unable to establish the truth of his identity. Therefore, let us go and inquire from the highly intelligent king of Braj, Nanda Maharaj, and he will free us from our doubts. So that is the setting, just after Krishna has lifted Govardhan Hill. So they're going through so many different stories. They have already spoken about the things they saw. Now remember, they saw certain things because they took place in Gokul. They saw him with Putana. They saw him with Trinavarta. They saw him when he kicked over a cart, just a newborn baby. Recently, one friend of a friend had a baby, and we saw this baby who was only maybe 2 or 3 days old. And the legs were about, you know, this long. They're about this thin, and the baby's trying to, if anyone who has had the experience of seeing a newborn baby, they're trying to work out how come there's no womb around them, you know, and their legs just kind of go out and in, and they're just really tender. And the mother is, you know, wrapping them and protecting them. So Mother Yasoda was like that with her newborn child. And that this little tiny baby, innocent, delicate baby, could knock over a big, big wooden cart that had all of the brass pots on it. It was so heavy, a cowherd man couldn't really move it by himself. They needed a bullock cart to move it. And that this little baby just lying underneath. So they asked the boys who were present, supposedly taking care of him, what happened. And they told the story, oh, he just kicked his little leg and the whole cart fell over. And the cowherd men spoke to each other and said, you know, you're as foolish as them if you ask them what happened. That's what they say. You ask them, you can expect a story like this. You know, and they all laughed and patted the young boys on the head and thought, you know, and they picked it all up and set it up, put him back underneath, because that couldn't have been possible. So then they saw that, and then they saw other things, and then they started hearing about things, and they also saw that when Kaliya came, he chastised Kaliya very soundly, and Kaliya left. And after that, they slept on the bank of the river Jamuna, and a big forest fire came. And they were all asleep, and Krishna, he was up and awake, because he was meditating on the love of some of the residents of Vrindavan who were also not asleep. And he was there, and he saw this forest fire, and he just devoured it. With his eyes, he swallowed this fire, and nobody was affected by it. They saw it burning down the trees. They were aware of it and the heat of its presence, and all of a sudden it was gone. So they had seen some things. So now they're telling him this. And also we saw that when he pulled down these two trees, they were so strong, big trees. They were towering up above the house. Big, thick trunks probably far bigger than him, wide, and gnarled and old. They'd been there for ages and ages and ages. And they just, if you tied a rope to them, you tied a child, if we took one of the children who was naughty, and you just found a branch and you tied a rope and said, you stay here for a little while until I come back, then I'll untie you. And this little boy or little girl is there, and your daughter, and, you know, just like there, they can't do anything. But he just took this mortar and he went between these two trees, and they fell, and they made such a loud sound. And not only that, after the loud sound, these two men came out of the trees, and these two men were like brilliant, shining, and they started offering prayers to him. And guess who saw all of this? Who saw all of this? The boys saw it all. The cowherd boys saw it all. So when the cowherd men came and said, "What happened?" They said, "Oh, it was really quite simple. Krishna was pulling, and they fell over, and these two men came out, and they started off in prison. They disappeared, and they're not there anymore." And the boy and the men thought, "Oh, we did it again. We made a fool of ourselves again. We asked these little children, and of course they're making up something." So they didn't take that seriously either, but all these things are building up. So they're talking about this. And in the next verse, they say, "Another time when Krishna was tending the calves in the forest, together with Balaram and the cowherd boys, the demon Bakasura came with the intention of killing Krishna. But Krishna seized this inimical demon by the mouth and tore him apart." This one they had heard about. They didn't see it. But the boys would come home every night and say, "This fantastic thing happened today." And you know how boys think something kind of a bit gruesome is fantastic. And the parents think all the time, "You were there? Were you all right?" And the parents are worried, and the boys just think it was a lot of fun. So here's another one. "Desiring to kill Krishna, the demon Vatsa disguised himself as a calf and entered among Krishna's calves. But Krishna killed the demon, and using his body, he enjoyed the sport of knocking kapapita fruits down from the trees." He played in this way. "Together with Balaram, Krishna killed the jackass demon and all his friends, thereby securing the safety of the Talavan forest, which abounded with fully ripened palm fruits." So here's another thing that Krishna did. And a small purport tells us that long, long ago, the powerful demons Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were born of the goddess Diti. Therefore, demons are commonly called Daityas, meaning descendants of Diti. Dhanukasura, the ass demon, terrorized the Talavan forest with his friends, but Sri Krishna and Balaram killed them, just as modern governments kill terrorists who harass innocent people. So they told him about this. And they had seen when Krishna chastised Kaliya. Krishna chastised the most poisonous serpent Kaliya, and after humbling him, he drove him forcibly from the lake of the Jamuna. In this way, the Lord made the water of that river free from the snake's powerful poison. Now they say, "Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braja cannot give up our constant affection for your Son? And how is it that He has so spontaneously attracted us? Here is their question. But Nanda Maharaj is going to answer this question. But the story is told in the lore of Nandagram, the place of Nanda Maharaj, that when the cowherd men came and they asked these questions, your Son, you know, He's so great, He's done this, He's done that, and they expressed all of Krishna's great activities and that maybe He was superhuman. Nanda Maharaj himself, he thought for a little bit, and then he thought about this, and he thought about it, and then he thought about it, and then he started to laugh. And he said to them, you're saying, my Son, maybe He's a demigod or he's the Supreme Lord, but does a demigod, when it thunders at night, does he run and hide under the bed? Do I have to get him out from under the bed and put him in bed beside me because he's so frightened? You know, or does a demigod, does he kind of like go from house to house and steal? Have you ever heard of this behavior? And then he goes in a whole list of the naughty activities that Krishna performed amongst them. And then he asks them again, so you think He's God? Do you think He's God? And they all look at him feeling very foolish because he's just described all of these naughty, childish activities. He tells lies. Does God tell lies? Do you think He lies all the time? Sometimes we take a stick to try to teach Him because of His stealing and misbehavior. Is this God? Is this really God? And they all look at each other and they feel so foolish. You know, what are we talking about? And Nanda Maharaj laughs at such a silly proposition. And they start laughing. And they're laughing together and they're all laughing and they're like bending over double, laughing at this ridiculous proposition that this misbehaved young boy who they all love so dearly could actually be God. This doesn't make any sense to them. But then Nanda Maharaj, he shares with them again what Garga Muni has told him. So in this purport to this particular verse, text 13, in the purport it says, the very word Krishna means the all-attractive one. The residents of Vrindavan could not give up their constant love for Krishna. Their attitude towards Him was not particularly theistic because they were unsure whether He was God or not. So there is no reverence there. And this is what is striking, and sometimes it's a little unnerving, because we ourselves don't have a lot of reverence, perhaps just by nature of the age that we live in, and we're asked to have a lot of reverence when we come in and stand before the deities. We should approach them very reverentially, respectfully. So here we're hearing about Krishna in a way that's devoid of this reverence. His father's not thinking, yes, He's the Supreme Lord. He doesn't call Him Lord. We call Him Lord. He doesn't call Him Lord. He thinks of Him in a very informal way. So this is very, not very theistic, you could say. It sounds a little too sort of almost frivolous. We should be much more serious. And they don't know if He's God. They couldn't work it out. Is He God? Is He not God? We don't know. But He attracted all their love precisely because, as God, He is the all-attractive person, the supreme object of our love. The cowherd men also asked another question. They said, we have so much love for Him. We're always thinking about Him. He draws our hearts towards Him all the time. But then they said, how is it that Krishna feels such constant love for us? We love Him, we're always thinking of Him, and He loves us, and He's always thinking of us. How is that? In fact, the Supreme Lord loves all beings who are eternally His children. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna dramatically declares His affection for Arjuna and urges Arjuna to reciprocate that love by surrendering to Him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his prayers to Lord Krishna states, Itadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi dudaivam idrisham ihajani nanugraha. My Lord, You are so merciful toward me, but I am so unfortunate that love for You has not awakened within me. So here is our position, different than the residents of Nandagram, of Vrindavan. love for you has not awakened within me. Our misfortune, in this statement, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also uses the word anurag. This is the word for love. That this anurag, this love, we love him so much. So here this word anurag is also used. And we say, our misfortune is that we cannot reciprocate this anurag or loving affection that the Lord feels for us. Although we are infinitesimal and insignificant, and the Lord is infinitely attractive, somehow we do not give him our love. We must accept responsibility for this foolish decision, since to surrender to God or not is the essential expression of our free will. To surrender to God or not is the essential expression of our free will. This rests with us. There's no excuse for this. There's no one else can do it. There's no one to blame. There's nothing that gets in the way of the fact that this goes directly to each one of us. This is the essential expression of our free will. Because if we want to love him, then all the elements of our life can turn favorable towards that, even the negative. And if we don't want to love him, then everything can turn favorable towards moving away and forgetting him. So this we should understand. We accept responsibility for our foolish decision. The Krishna consciousness movement provides an efficient systemic program to help conditioned souls revive their original blissful consciousness, which is love of God, Krishna consciousness. The intricacies of Krishna consciousness are so wonderful that even Krishna's eternal associates, the residents of Vrindavan, are astonished by them, as shown by these verses. So we'll continue with some of the other things they tell Nanda Maharaj. On the one hand, this boy is only 7 years old. And on the other, we see that he lived at the great hill Govardhan. Therefore, a doubt about your son arises within us. So in the Bhagavatam, answering this question of doubt, Nanda Maharaj replies, O cowherd men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Garga Muni spoke to me as follows about this boy. Garga Muni has said, your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed 3 different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in a blackish color. So he's giving him all of this information that Garga Muni has given him. For many reasons, Garga Muni said, this beautiful son of yours appears sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudeva. See how discreet Garga Muni was. He didn't want to disturb the mood and feeling of Nanda Maharaj. So he said, sometime he appears that he might have been the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudeva. For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental qualities and activities. These are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokul, this child will always act auspiciously for you, and by his grace only you will pass all difficulties. O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history, when there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and when honest people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to curb the rogues and to protect the people and enable them to flourish. So he's telling of his past incarnations, all this Nanda Maharaj is taking in. Demons cannot harm the demigods who always have Vishnu on this side. And similarly, any person or group attached to all auspicious Krishna cannot be defeated by their enemies. Now, Srila Prabhupada makes a little comment here. Srila Prabhupada has especially indicated in this connection that just as Lord Krishna's associates could not be defeated by Kamsa, so his modern-day devotees will not be defeated by their demoniac opponents, and nor will the Lord's devotees be defeated by the internal enemies, the lusty materialistic senses. So Srila Prabhupada has said this. They may be disturbed for some time, but they cannot be defeated. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours, they say, having heard this, is as good as Narayan. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. Therefore, we should not be astonished at his activities. The Nanda Maharaj says, after Gaga Rishi spoke these words to me, I returned home and began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us all free from trouble, is actually an expansion of Lord Narayan. Having heard these statements from Nanda Maharaj and from Gaga Muni, the residents of Vrindavan became enlivened. Their perplexity was gone and they worshipped Nanda and Krishna with great respect. Actually, they worshipped Krishna, but they didn't worship him as Narayan. They couldn't do that. It would spoil their whole mood, their sentiments. They could not take care of him anymore like that, playfully. They could not chastise him and threaten to punish him and tie him up and so on and so forth. So when they worshipped him, they didn't worship him like that. And neither did they really take this very seriously. It all went in and it all went out just as quickly. They couldn't really remember it for very long. By the influence of Krishna's Lila Shakti, they heard all of this. Yes, this is true. This is very nice. And when they wanted to worship him, what did they do? They gave him garlands, fragrances, and garments they brought from their home. Now, Nanda Maharaj was there, but Krishna was playing. To Nanda Maharaj, they gave jewels and gold coins as a mark of respect. And Krishna, he was playing in the forest when this conversation took place. So when he returned home, the residents of Vrindavan encouraged him by decorating him with beautiful yellow garments, necklaces, armlets, earrings, crowns, and so forth, and shouting, "All glories, all glories, all glories to the jewel of Vrindavan." So this was their worship of Krishna. They were not interested in Krishna as anything else than this. He was the jewel of Vrindavan, and they loved him, and he loved them. And this was all that they knew. All right, has anyone any questions? Any comments? Anything to... Yes,
in this, Garga Muni is saying that he had appeared in previous millenniums as the complexion of red, white, and yellow. So yes. These incarnations, are they Purushavatar or Yugavatar or Lilavatar? And which incarnations are they?
I don't know. I don't know. I would have to look something like that up. Maybe you can look it up on the folio or something. I'm not so learned. Maybe we'll look at the verse and see if it says something. Somebody know?
Wait one second.
They are Yuga avatars. Yuga avatars.
Which exactly names of
Anu Yugam Tanu, transcendental bodies according to the different yugas. Does anyone know who these three are? We know one is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes? One, the white one is Parshuram. Red is Parshuram. And the white?
White is Kapila.
Okay.
And red is Yagya.
Okay, so there are a couple of different choices there. So these are the Yuga avatars. Yes, did you have a question?
Yes, I was just wondering, 2 points, who were really the cowherds? And secondly, why did the Lord appear in the prison in a four-arm form, and when he was carried across the river, was it as a baby in a two-arm form?
The Lord appears as the Lord in Mathura. So he appears as Vasudev is his father, and Vasudev means, as it described here with a long line over the A, means the son of Vasudev. So when he appears in Mathura, he appears as Vasudev Krishna. And Vasudev Krishna means he has a forearm form. In Dwarka, Krishna can assume four arms. So this is not the original Krishna, because Krishna, he himself, he never appears outside of Vrindavan. So what happens is that he appears in Mathura, he takes birth in Vrindavan. These are different aspects, these are different forms. So when Vasudeva is carrying his son, he comes to the river Jamuna, he crosses the river Jamuna, the baby falls out of his arms, he finds the baby again, places the baby back in his arms, then he's carrying Krishna and takes Krishna to the home of Nanda Yasoda, places the baby there. So that baby, this is not my own words, this is according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that the Lord appears when he falls and is picked up, he's now appearing in his Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna aspect, form, his original form. So he places him there, and as far as Nanda and Yasoda know, he was their son. They never thought anything different, and never will, because he actually is their son. So when he leaves again, when he goes to Vrindavan, if you remember, he comes to the bank of the river Jamuna with a Kura, and they say they'll take their bath, they go to take bath in the water, and a Kura comes and he sees them. No, the Kura takes his bath, he comes back and he sees them sitting on the chariot with four arms, because a Kura Ghat is the borderline between Mathura and Vrindavan. So he does not take Krishna back to Mathura, he takes Vasudeva Krishna on from there. Ananda Maharaj, he never sees that. He just sees the Krishna who he loves. This is a mysterious aspect of the pastimes of Krishna. And your other question, why he appears in four arms? Because he has to assure Vasudeva and Devaki that he's the Lord. If he appeared in a two-arm form, they would be very worried that maybe he was another baby that comes to be killed. But with four arms, it becomes quite clear that he's different.
Who are really the cowherd boys?
The cowherd boys, there are different groups of cowherd boys, there are different groups of residents of Vrindavan. Some of them are, for example, I have some reference material on the gopis, not the cowherd boys, but it may be very similar. That there are different groups of living entities become into the category of gopis. Some of them have done worship of Krishna and wanted to enter into his pastimes as gopis or as cowherd boys. So their souls have newly arrived, you could say, into the pastimes. Some of them are expansions of Srimati Radharani or Balaram, and they're Nitya Siddha, and they're actually they're exalted. Some of them are expansions of Krishna and Srimati Radharani themselves. Some of them are exalted eternal associates that never, ever, ever, ever touch the material world. And some of them are demigods that were asked to come and play this part, so they come down too. So at the time when Krishna's pastimes wind up, different personalities go back into different directions. Any other questions? Yes?
When you read Prabhupada's books and watch the video footage and listen to the lectures of them, Prabhupada makes some comments about the differences between men and women, and some of those comments are very, very difficult for conditioned Western minds to accept. How can we overcome?
Well, my answer is simple, but it's not easy to do, and so therefore it doesn't immediately relieve the difficulty. But the reality is that the way you can overcome it is by understanding that you're not your body. And when you think of that thoughtfully, if you're a man now, you might have been a woman just 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And if you're a woman now, and it's so frustrating, you're definitely going to be a man in your next life. And vice versa. So wait a bit, and then you can taste the other position. So how do you get that type of intelligence to sort of stick through all the dealings of life? That's not easy. It's not at all easy, because we see in a relative way, we see according to our body, that's there. So therefore there's some frustration, there's always some difficulty. But Srila Prabhupada's recommendation on that was that he gave an analogy or an image of a bag, and you put a lot of uncut stones in the bag and you shake it and they gradually rub against each other. It's quite painful, but what happens is gradually they rub and rub and they sort of polish each other. And I don't think I don't know myself of any easy way out of identifying with your body and your mind and seeing others in the same way, except to become more advanced in the process of chanting and hearing and gradually acquire some realization. And the other thing is, don't take it too deeply to heart if you can avoid it. Because it will all change. It was and it isn't. Like, we were all little once. Every one of us was a small child, and little children don't even know what's a boy and a girl. They just play together. So now we have grown up an adult false ego, and it has, you know, barnacles on it, and they kind of rub against others and hurt others. But it's not going to be always like that. It's necessary to try and see in a larger perspective. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not a sort of automatic, you know, there, it's all gone. But everything else is a bit of a band-aid compared to that. That's the real, that's what Krishna consciousness is offering as we go forward. Any other questions? Yes.
Mataji, yesterday I was reading in the that it was mentioning about returning to the old home of living entities from the spiritual world to the material world. Then it was explained that since the living entities have a tiny bit of independence, they have the propensity to fall down from the spiritual world to the material world, except the eternal associates who will never fall down to the material world. So is it like every living entity who are not eternal associates of the Lord in the spiritual world, they have to come down to the material world at any point of time and then go back to the spiritual world just to refresh their rasas over there, the spiritual world?
Just to what?
Just to refresh their rasas, just to...
Refresh their rasas? The love
for God.
No. To refresh their rasa, they come to the material world. No. When you actually attain that position, Bhagavad Gita says that, when one attains a position, one doesn't fall down. But still, Prabhupada is asked the question, can you fall down? And Prabhupada answers, yes. Because nothing is based on force. But do you fall down? No. And then only because we have no idea what the spiritual world is like, we can even think like that. Because we have no idea, right? I have no idea, you have no idea, I have an idea of here. And so in one place after a while I think, oh, you know, I'm living in Perth, it's small, boring, you know, let me go to Melbourne for a while. And then I come back to my home place and I think, oh, it's not so bad, it's quite nice, I feel refreshed. But no, it's not like that. The residents in Goloka Vrindavan, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braj cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? Once you attain that position, one doesn't fall down. And then do they come to the material world? They may come to the material world. We see Jaya and Vijay came to this material world. They came for service. So the Prabhupada brings that out quite strongly in that pastime. There's a leela going on. Prahlad Maharaj is eternal. Every once a day, perhaps in the day of Brahma, Prahlad Maharaj's leela, Lord Nrisimhadeva, appears. He's not coming to refresh, as if to say, getting a bit bored here. It's getting a little bit. I need a little bit of a. No, that isn't there. That's something from here.
Is it that the Goloka Vrindavan are the living entities in Goloka Vrindavan are eternal associates, or they are also
No, they're not all eternal associates. Otherwise, we cannot go there. But they become eternal associates. So Srila Prabhupada describes it like that. They become eternal, eternally associated with Krishna. And they come down. Yes, they come to the material world, but they come only in this very authoritative book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that I was talking about in the retreat. It describes there where Gopakumar, through the mouth, Sanatana Goswami, through the mouth of a young cowherd boy, he's teaching us what's on all the levels of the universe, so you won't need to go there. And he speaks how he came from being just an ordinary, not ordinary, but a cowherd boy in Govardhan, up to his final eternal position. It's described by Sanatana Goswami for our benefit. And so he says, quoting him, he says, sometimes I'm there, and sometimes I come to the Vrindavan on this earth, and I don't touch anything in between. I'm not conscious of anything in between. And he says, if sometimes I see a resident of Vaikuntha, I feel very sorry for him. Of course, the resident of Vaikuntha is perfectly satisfied with their worship of Narayan, their love of Narayan. But as a cowherd boy, he's so intimate, as we were speaking of at the retreat, the love is so intimate. It's like if Queen Elizabeth walked in here, we would all stand up, right? And we would all kind of not quite know what to do, you know. She's here, you know, and then all her guards and people would come in and security. And, you know, in India, when a big man comes to the Krishna Balaram Mandir, he comes with a big car with a big siren on the top, and there's four cars in front and four cars behind. They have guns, and they get out and they stand everywhere, and all around the gunmen stand. And then this well-to-do politician or somebody, he comes and he goes like this quickly in front of all the altars, and then they usher him out. And you don't do anything, you just stand there and think, okay, he's here, so we, you know, look a little respectful. So that's a very distant relationship. So the residents of Vaikuntha, they're not that distant. They're intimate in their hearts, but it's reverential because they know the Lord's greatness. But the residents of Vrindavan forget that. They climb on Krishna's back. They push him over. They call him names. They don't say, do you mind if I call you a name? They just call him names. He makes sandcastles on the ground. He creates a whole village out of the dust of Vrindavan. Srila Kavi Kanpur tells us this. He makes this whole village, and one of the boys kicks it over. And then Krishna starts to cry as a young, small child. Then he kicks over their villages and they kick over his. They play like this. Imagine that. So we can't imagine, but that's how intimate they love. But it's not just like ordinary children in the nursery. They love him. And that, in the Bhagavatam, it describes that they have taken many, many births to attain such a good fortune. Many, many births of loving Krishna to reach that stage. So Gopakumar is in that category. So when he sees the residents of Vrindavan going like this, he feels sorry for them. So they go between there and there, and they have no interest in anything else. They don't touch the material world. So that is their position. And it can be our position. Alright. If there are no more questions... Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Go Premanandi. Amen.